My name is Samantha Garner, and I'm from Boston, Massachusetts. I'm a Cheeselandian because I take cheese seriously, just like they do in Wisconsin. Go to Cheeselandia.com to learn more, and if it's for you, sign up.
Hello, and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Greg Bresnitz.
I'm your other half, Darren Bresnitz.
We are on our final stop of the Snacky Tunes book tour in support of our new book out on Faden, Snacky Tunes, Music is the Main Ingredient, Chefs and Their Music. You can pick up a copy of SnackyTunes.com, and we are in the Big Easy today. What a conversation. What a way to end the tour. Just some true living legends. Two old friends and a new one joined us. Who was with us for this one?
Well, we had Nina Compton, who we love, and has just been an active voice in most recent weeks of months about saving restaurants, what it means to support small businesses. She's just been a real, real guiding light. And then we have Ben Jaffe, heir to the throne. Can we say that for Preservation Hall Jazz Band?
He is the throne.
It was funny. I was digging out my old records and putting them away, and I came across the record that I picked up when we were in middle school, and there was his dad, Al Jaffe, with the tuba on a balcony in the Big Easy. And so it was great to talk with him.
Generational. Yeah. Ben plays the tuba. Dad played the tuba.
Yeah, I bet you his grandpa played the tuba, and future Jaffes must play the tuba. It was a really great conversation, a very great way to end the tour. But we weren't alone. Greg, who else was there with us?
We were joined by the wonderful Jackie of Cotillier Nola. They have the most stunning knife shop. If you are looking for knives that are sourced like natural wine from Japan, just incredible selection. I've never seen anything like this. The shop is tiny. The selection is massive. We cannot encourage you enough to go and check out Cotillier Nola, especially ahead of the holidays. They are cruising through their inventory. Equally, the event, like all of them, supported two charities, all book purchases, supported Son of a Saint, and also the Preservation Hall Foundation, two incredible New Orleans-based charities. Please go check them out if you haven't. What a tour. What an incredible tour. And what can we say? If you have a copy of the book, please go to our Spotify. All the playlists are up there. If you haven't gotten one of the limited edition t-shirts that we made, please go to everybody.world and look for Snacky Tunes or congratulations to you, Darren, and congratulations to Kong, and thanks to Faden for a wonderful tour.
Yeah, thanks for everyone who took the time to sit down with us this year and to all the chefs who took time to be a part of this book. We will get back there. We will get back to the next golden age of restaurants, and it's going to be better and stronger, but we don't get there without you calling your senator, writing your local congressman, and getting them on board to save our restaurants. Please, please, please do everything you can. Donate, call, make a ruckus. We all want to go out to eat when this thing is all over. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy our stop in New Orleans for Snacky Tunes Virtual Book Tour here on HRN.
We talk about food. About music with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
And welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Greg Bresnitz, and the other half your host, Darren Bresnitz. And we are so excited to be ending our virtual book tour with an absolute bang on event. We couldn't be more happy to be sitting around and just imbibing on this New Orleans vibe on a Thursday night as the fall sets across America. We want to welcome all of you to the event. If you have any questions for anyone involved, please email them at events@faden.com. We'll get to the end. And enough about me, because you're not here to see me talk. Guests, I'll kick it over to you. Why don't you introduce who you are and say a little bit about yourself?
Ben, why don't we start with you?
I am Ben Jaffe with the Preservation Hall Band in New Orleans, and I'm here in my studio downtown. And Greg, it is good to see you and hear your voice after all these months.
It's excellent to see you. Thank you for your DJ sets earlier in COVID. We appreciate it. Chef?
Hi, everybody. My name is Chef Nina Compton. I'm actually in my restaurant that looks like a tropical background or in the weeds, whatever you'd like. But I'm chef owner of Compella Pen and by What American Bistro here in New Orleans, and I'm happy to be the last stop of this book tour. So thank you for having me, and I'll kick it over to Jackie.
Hey guys, I'm Jackie Blanchard. I'm a chef by trade, owner of Cotillier in New Orleans and in Nashville. We're here in the shop, Cotillier on Oak Street, uptown in the River Bend in New Orleans. And I'm just thrilled to be here and to be part of such a cool crew of just, you know, unique voices with food and music. It just couldn't connect more. Very excited to be here.
Yes. Well, we're so happy. And, you know, we're here to celebrate all of the amazing chefs who were part of the book, Snacky Tunes, Music is the Main Ingredient, out on Faden. And, you know, we focused on cities all over the world. And what we found in all the research is that while some cities have really great food reputations, some cities have great music reputations, some cities have great art reputations, New Orleans, it has all of them. And if you've ever been lucky enough to spend time there, beyond just having reputations, there really is an incredible intersection. I can't really think of any other cities that exemplify that crossover between food, music, art, and how they inspire each other. And so I'd love for you to all talk a little bit about how the food and the music and the art of the city inspire what you do, whether it's making knives, making music, or making food. Chef, we'll start with you.
Sure. You know, New Orleans is so enchanting. That's the word I like to use when I describe the city. When you walk down anywhere in the city, it's the vibe is there, the music is there, the food is there. So I mean, it just makes sense that those things are intertwined, and historically they are intertwined, and that's why people come to the city, because of the music and the food. And I think that they really go hand in hand, and we're truly blessed to have so many talented musicians and chefs in the city that are doing different things, different genres. And I that's why I came here. That's why I moved here, is because of those two things. So it's in my veins.
Ben?
Oof, yeah, I think Nina said it right there. It's in the, it's in the core of the way this city interacts with itself, music and food, particularly in the communities that I grew up in, and you know, in certain neighborhoods. I mean, the 6th Ward, the 7th Ward, the 9th Ward, and you know, trim areas. These particular neighborhoods where I had lots of friends, you can feel this this connection to this ancestral connection to another place and another time that has been somehow preserved and maintained, and the soul of it is important, because all of those things that you just said, art, music, and food, those are all things that are bring people together in a communal way, and that's really important to me. I don't know why else I would play music if it wasn't to bring people together onto the same stage and into the same room together and have a communal experience. And that's what you experience when you're feeding people and nourishing people. You feel that communal experience. And same with art. When you said that, when I was thinking, I was like, is there, and does anybody create art to divide people? Or people, if you are, well, I can't even begin to think that way, because art is a way to communicate. It's a form of communication. So
people might, I remember some artists during the Bush residency, second Bush, who made some stuff that may have divided some people, and even during the Trump presidency, some art that's divided people. But
I didn't say create art that won't piss people off.
Yeah.
Good art does usually do that, you know?
Yes. But yes, it always includes a discourse, even if it might be opposing sides. How about that?
Yeah.
And Jackie, for you, where do you see how the two are intertwined in the city?
I just feel like, you know, like everybody touched on, it's part of our DNA. It's part of our fabric here. I feel like the city sort of chooses, it picks and chooses its people who it wants to be here. New Orleans has like this intangible nature about it that really draws you in such a dynamic way. And I think the absolute common denominator of that is the way that music and food have affected all of us so deeply, you know, just touching on the heels of, you know, our Katrina 15 years ago. I remember very specifically that Halloween right after the storm and when the city kind of reopened, we were all on Frenchman Street and people were just hugging and crying on each other. The first time they'd seen each other, first time we had been out since then, and what a connection the music scene was on Frenchman that night to bring us back home. And it's a way, it's hard to describe what it meant for those restaurants to come back and to be open, and how important that some of these restaurants are to us. You know, it's just, it's so dynamic, and it's so at the core of our being in this town. You cannot leave it. It touches you in some way every day. You know, I'm on Oak Street right down from, you know, the Maple Leaf, where we get a chance to see, you know, these amazing world-class musicians on, you know, before COVID times on a regular Tuesday night. And some of us kind of take that for granted sometimes because it's not so readily available in other cities. And I think this city is its connection to the music and the food and its emotion is so engaging. You know, it's sometimes indescribable. How important live music is and how much we miss it right now is just, it's something that I didn't think would affect me so deeply, until I, down the street from my house uptown, several folks would sort of hire out a brass band and play in their front yards. And so the neighborhood would sort of come out and watch this brass band play in a driveway so we could socially distance, so that we could have some live music. And I swear to God, I burst into tears so many times because it just hit me like a train, you know, like you don't expect to hit you that fast and that emotionally, when you realize what live music does for you, what the food that we're missing. You know, we're watching some of our best friends lose their restaurants right now, and how that affects us, because that food scene and that music scene is the most important thing we have, and it what draws us all together. And it's just like this intangible nature to it. That's just, it's hard to describe. It's just a very emotional sort of effect on all of us.
One of the things that New Orleans, I think, as Darren touched on, does so uniquely is that food and music are beacons of hope in the most difficult times. I think as you touched on Katrina, but even through this hurricane season or even just getting through COVID. And Ben, I'd love to start with you about the role in which you see music in New Orleans, but in general, as getting people through difficult times and how it can help people find joy in even the most difficult situations. And Nina, I would have the same question to you, but replace music with food.
In the African-American community of New Orleans, for over 100 years, it's the ultimate sign of respect and honor to have a band accompany your funeral procession. And part of that is to play music that helps people to mourn this loss. That's a powerful, 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 powerful a moment, you know, to see an entire community mourning together, and the music being the vehicle, you know, and then to see the moment that the body is laid to rest and the mourners exit the cemetery And once everybody's come out onto the street again from the cemetery, the band begins to play happier, more joyful songs. And you can feel the sadness come off of people. You can physically see it happening. And what was once sorrow is now joy and happiness. And it's the music that is helping people deal with this, you know, unbearable feeling of loss. That's how powerful music is in New Orleans. It's used at our saddest moment. It's used to help us through our saddest moments in life. I know for me and my fellow musicians, we've missed the human interaction, because that's the environment that we grew up in, where you can actually see people physically responding to the music you're playing. And we've had to really go inside of ourselves and sort of become monk-like in our daily routine to help us get through this, this period where we're not able to perform live, because that is why we play music in New Orleans, and why the musicians I grew up with play music. Is it was this live experience. The oldest member of our band doesn't, he vaguely knows what the internet is. He hears people talking about it all the time, but he's 88 years old. So to him, it's live music. It's live music. So we're creating that here in this space and at Preservation Hall, where us band members are still able to get together and do music really for us. But I don't know I imagine it's the same for people in the world of food, is you're cooking. If you can't cook for somebody, I can't even imagine. It's like not playing music. It's you're kind of not being able to quite access that thing that you feel like you've been put on earth to do. So we've been enjoying these moments where we get to connect with everybody, because this reminds us of why we just, keep going, keep going, keep going, keep your heads up.
Jeff?
Yeah, I think that, Ben really captured the same thing that happens in the food industry now, is that, back in March when we were told to shut down, I didn't know what to do. I had to pause for a quick second and really wrap my head around it. But that was kind of my motivation through this all, was hoping to come back to the kitchen cooking for people. Because again, I can make the best dish, but if I have nobody to serve it to, what's the point? And I think that, during this time, a lot of people are mourning human interaction. They're mourning normalcy. They're missing their families. My mom lives back in the Caribbean. I miss her more than ever. And, I feel like I'm 12 years old, because I call her. I'm like, Mom, I really miss you, because she just seems so far away. So when it comes to food, I think we're all looking for comfort. And that's one of the things, when I opened my restaurants, I basically restructured the menu to have those comforting dishes that people just feel like it's a warm hug in a bowl, when they're having the curry goat, because it's just comfort, and it's satisfaction when you have something that's really tasty and hits your soul. And I think that's what people want nowadays. They really want to be taken care of, given, shown some love. I think, either through food or music, I think for me, you know, really good food makes me really happy. And so does really good music. It sets the tone. I said it in the book. I said in the book that the first thing I do is I put music on when I wake up, because it sets the tone for my day. It puts me in a really good mood. And I think that just becomes this transfer of energy through your day, through music. And then that transfers to me and I create food and that transfers to somebody else. So I think it's just a pass on of positive energy. And I think that's what we really need now, because I think a lot of people are very lonely. You know, I think it's a lot to deal with. And I think that we're 9 months into this and we never thought that we would be, you know, 9 months into this. And I think that it's a dark road, but I think the sense of community in New Orleans is like no other. I think that people here, they check in on each other. Hey, how are you doing? You're okay? You know, I had friends that came to the pop-up yesterday. Like, hey, I just came to support you. And I think that's what keeps this city going, is because we all support each other. Nobody wants to see anybody fail. And I think that I was shown during Katrina, and now we're seeing this during the pandemic, that we all want to see not just our friends, but the entire city succeed and not fall behind.
Yeah, you know, it's all beautiful stories. I was actually in New Orleans for work the first Easter after Katrina, and I'll never forget it. I had Leah Chase's Gumbo Z'Herbs, which was incredible to see the response of her doors being back open, to have this, you know, dish that really only comes around once a year, and to have it that first dish after Katrina, and to see the outpouring of what it meant to people is something that has always stuck with me and inspired me, and just thought about like how that one moment, that one dish can inspire years on and stays with you. And I think that's really the big beauty of food and music, especially when you look for it outside of what you work on. So, you know, Jackie and Nina, you work in food and you look to music for inspiration, and Ben, you look to food for your own inspiration to your creative process. So I'd love for you to each share maybe a story or a moment, Jackie and Nina with music and Ben with food, that inspired you in your own work, or some moment like that. Jackie, we'll start with you. What was a music moment that inspired some of the work and some of your creative process?
I feel like I've just been such a huge music fan my whole life. I started playing drums and guitar when I was young, through both my parents were huge music fans. So music has always been such an important part of my life. I think hearing some of Dr. John's albums on Sunday mornings at my dad's house cooking breakfast, you know, was such a vibe. And I think a lot of my career built off of that. I, you know, went through culinary school in a very unknown part of South Louisiana that, you know, has a lot of connection to the land, has a lot of history. But I think that when I started to realize how important musical notes and tone and being in the right key was, that translated directly into cooking, that's what kind of lit me on fire. Because I realized it had such a, this dynamic connection of, you know, think of a Southeast Asian pantry and you've got all these amazing condiments. How do you balance that properly? It's the same when you're writing a song, when you're composing with notes. I think that caught on to me very early. And I think that has carried through, you know, just like Nina said, when, you know, music's the first thing she puts on in the morning because it sets the tone. I think the same thing was true in a kitchen. In a lot of the kitchens I ran, I would put music on during our prep sessions because it gave the kitchen a little bit more of a, you know, not an unfocused vibe, but it, you know, it gave a little background and it inspired the day. And it kind of set a tone. And I just think that's some of the most important parts of the relationship between music and food are those notes and those harmonies. You know, and then the resiliency of the city, you know, over the course of, you know, all that we've sort of been through over the last, decade and, or more, you know, those same notes, those same harmonies come alive and they play, you know, they play a tone to how we live our lives here. They, you know, directly impact our everyday lives. So I just think, you know, that particularly Dr. John. We actually share a birthday. And he was a huge influence earlier. I mean, his music was a huge influence early in my life in a weird connection to cooking at my dad's house. And that sort of like, you know, made me sort of wake up and realize what that connection was with music and food.
Nina?
So my connection through food and music is when I was, I think 19 years old, I moved to Jamaica to work as a chef apprentice. And I remember the first day I touched down in Jamaica and I started working and people were showing me around and they're so proud of their music and their food. And I remember just really being thrown into reggae music. And that for me was just, I never looked back. I would always loved it. And for me, putting reggae on, it kind of just takes me back to Jamaica where it's, you know, it just seems like every Caribbean person, maybe I'm biased because I'm from there, they just don't seem like they have a worry in the world. So when I put it on, whether it's Steel Pulse, whether it's Bob Marley, it's just like, it's going to be all right, you know, everything's going to be fine. And it kind of just puts me in this mindset of things will work itself out. And that was, you know, a really special time for me because living in Jamaica, I really fell in love with the food and just understanding how different the Caribbean was. And then with that connection of the music, it's just still kind of like my backbone right there.
And to you, how has food sparked the creative process for your music making?
Food is everything to us. I can't really think of music without thinking of food. I don't know if that's unique or not. I mean, I don't think it's that unique because we've met people down in Brazil and when we went to Cuba and to Haiti and Colombia and Mexico, it's like, it's just as important there as it is or central to each other as it is here in New Orleans. You know, I love to cook and I grew up around a community of people who always had something cooking on the stove, you know, so there was always food cooking. It was, almost like just one long meal. My whole childhood, I guess, kind of feels like just a really long, beautiful meal. But that's, you know, my dad's friends also were musicians and restaurateurs and chefs. And one of the places where, that really intersected the most in New Orleans in my childhood was this place called Buster's in the French Quarter on the corner of Orleans and Burgundy, about a block from Congo Square. And that was where it was kind of hard to tell the difference between who was the musician and who was the chef, you know, because the energy and the personality, like overlapped, you know, between the two. I always felt the two as being like hand in hand with one another, you know? And I always cook. I cook every day for my band. It's part of our ritual, you know? And
what do you cook?
What do you cook? What's your specialty?
Well, we always have a pot of beans on. There's always a pot of beans cooking. So today it was kidney beans. It was red beans today. We've had this for a couple of days now, the same pot. We just keep adding water.
Good flavor, right? Builds up.
If you're from New Orleans, you know what I'm talking about. For like a week. If you need to, man. I'll confess that I cook my beans with a pressure cooker, and I know some people argue about that, but I'll tell you, it's one way you can wake up in the morning and be like, I want a pot of beans today. And you know, by lunch, you're going to have a pot of beans. Otherwise, that's like a 7 to 8 hour, 9 hour waiting period from the time you decide you want beans, unless you have figured out a way to cook them faster. So I cook beans. You know, I try to cook on the healthier side for my guys because they all have different issues, health issues. So we've been eating a lot of Peruvian rice. I don't know if you all are familiar with Peruvian rice.
No, hit us.
Otherwise known as quinoa.
Very healthy.
What I discovered is not one of the guys in my band would eat quinoa, but they love Peruvian rice.
I hope they're not watching. I hope he didn't just spill the beans.
Your old daughter, whatever works on her works on them.
Wow. Also, Ben, I think the pressure cooker is the most underrated tool in the entire kitchen, so I'm here for that 100%.
We're getting some questions in. If you have some questions, please send to events@fadein.com. One of the questions that I think we want to give some worthy time to, we're obviously entering a second lockdown. Cases are on the rise. One of the audience members asked, one aside is our father is a former state epidemiologist who's been roped back into doing public health, not roped back in, but gladly.
He went willingly, and we're so happy he's on the front lines. He's our source. Everyone says they got a uncle in the Pentagon. We got a dad in the New Jersey State Epidemiology Office.
So he's been reviewing different vaccine protocols. And he called me this week and he said, Louisiana has got their act together.
Agreed.
Absolutely agree.
Based on the fact that you've been through so many crises. So the question from the audience is, what does the world have to learn from New Orleans in times of crisis?
Mm-hmm.
Resiliency, number one.
Start with you. Jeff?
Oh, with me, I'm sorry. I thought it was Jackie.
I'm sorry.
I think the biggest thing, like Jackie says, is resiliency. I think Louisiana has been through so much, hurricanes, you name it. And this year alone, we had 7 scares, and the last one was actually the biggest one that really kind of got us. But I think all in all, it's the sense of community that really keeps us going. And I think people here are responsible because they want to get back to normalcy. I think the mayor's done a really good job in terms of clamping things down. I think a lot of people are being, think that she might be a little bit too strict, but I think in these cases, we have to be strict. This is such a virus that is so deadly and so contagious, and we're seeing so many places spike and shut down. And, you know, it's the sense of we need to be responsible. We need to be careful and protect our city and make people want to come back here because, you know, without music or food or anything else and arts, you know, people will not come back. And that's why we need to get back on track as soon as possible. And that has to come down with being organized caretakers of the city.
I couldn't agree more, Nina. I think that she's made the hard decisions that are extremely difficult to make and for our betterment, because just like you guys said, we are on the right side of this and we have been for a while. A lot of times New Orleanians have to laugh to keep from crying. And that's, I think our resiliency comes out of that. We are always used to being, given sort of the short end of the stick a lot of times, whether it's natural disasters or, you know, any of this kind of stuff that we're going through. And I think that we have been so used to it, and we will not live our lives here without some sense of community and the importance behind everyone bringing the right mentality to that. And I think that comes back with, you know, the responsibility of the community, taking care of each other, just like you said, Nina, and how important, especially right now during, you know, this crisis, be having each other's back, and finding a way out of it. And the pivoting of businesses that, you know, certainly we've had to do, because our entire business is built on you coming here into the shop, holding a tangible, you know, tool. How important is that tool to an everyday chef's life? It's a representation of their work. So how do we create, you know, that same experience without having that, you know, face-to-face sort of interaction? It's difficult to do. So I think a lot of, you know, circling back to what makes New Orleans so special with that is our resiliency to just adapt and overcome, no matter what's thrown at us.
Yeah, I mean, that sense of community is really something that I think about all the time when I think about New Orleans. You just feel that. What have you seen, or specific stories or anything that you have done? I know you talked about, you know, brass bands in driveways, but being such institutions, having such, you know, the means to support or needing support, Ben, we'll go to you. What support of the community have you seen? What have you done? What is inspired by you? And, you know, obviously the balance is that some people don't have the means to support and things like that. So how can you feel that you're giving back to the community if you may not have the means or even the mental space to do so?
That's a great question that, you know, many of us ask ourselves often, you know, and really, I believe speaks to a quality that is here in New Orleans and that people are attracted to. It's immediately when put in the face of a tragedy, it's not how do I save my own ass, it's how do I save everybody. You know, that's kind of the feeling I get from having lived here, you know, being from here, is this, you know, gratefulness, this appreciation. I even tell people who are considering moving here or are here, living here, but doubting why they live here, I tell them that, you know, there's a huge responsibility that comes with living in New Orleans. And it's almost like a tax, you know, and it's, you never know when it's going to hit you. You don't know what form it's going to take, but there's a responsibility and a cost for living here. And part of it is being a member of a community, a responsible member of a community, you know, and that's something I take very seriously. I take that to heart. And what we've done at Preservation Hall is very quickly turned our attention to the most important resource and the thing that needed our attention the most. And that was this community of musicians who generation after generation continue a musical tradition that is celebrated at Preservation Hall. We wanted to honor those musicians and immediately began a COVID relief fund for those musicians, so that the musicians who play at Preservation Hall, and as of last week, we have over 20 musicians, elder statesmen in our legacy program, so that are 65 and older, and about 35 musicians in the greater Preservation Hall community that all receive support through our foundation every month. And that's been a lifeblood for them. And we've been just pounding, finding ways to raise awareness and funds for this cause. And man, it's been a blessing. It's helped us connect for the first time with many of our supporters that aren't only just here in New Orleans. You know, some of the biggest supporters of New Orleans aren't even from here or don't even live here, but they come here every year for Jazz Fest or you know, they went to Tulane, or they worked here, or they married somebody from here, or they came here one night and said, oh my God, I could live here the rest of my life, you know, and then a week later they're signing a, you know, a lease somewhere, you know, on an apartment in the Garden District. It happens every day, you know. So
this episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. My name is Samantha Garner, and I'm from Boston, Massachusetts. I'm a Cheeselandian because I take cheese seriously, just like they do in Wisconsin. Cheeselandia is a community for loud and proud cheese lovers brought to life by Wisconsin Cheese. I know that I can always cook amazing food with their cheese, and it's even good enough just to snack on. As a Cheeselandia member, I know there is always a supportive community behind me who always gets as excited as I do about cheese. Go to Cheeselandia.com to learn more, and if it's for you, sign up. Check us out on Instagram at Cheeselandia.
My wife and I are in the process of, we just moved to Louisiana, and we're thinking about where to land, and I now know the response. I did not know there was a responsibility that came with New Orleans. Good to know that it comes with, I wouldn't say a price, but
it's a tax. He's absolutely right.
It's a tax.
It comes in various forms, and you don't know when it's going to hit, but there's always a tax.
Jackie, I think that you might be in a unique position outside of Chef and Ben, because it's almost like buying gold in a depression, right? Like, you know, when things like live music and eating out go down, home cooking goes up. So I'd be curious to see, it's like, you know, what trends have you seen, or what have you seen that's changed in the city that is, you know, so self-identified with live music and good food? And how is either consumer habits or how have people still kind of kept a New Orleans spirit alive while still adapting to COVID times? As a shop, as a beautiful, by the way, allow me to say aside, your shop is stunning. What you have done is incredibly difficult. I walked in there and, like, while we were talking, I was like, this is impossible what you've done. You've treated your knife shop like a natural wine buying. It's incredible. I highly recommend anyone to check it out, order a line. But like, what have you seen as changes that still reflects the New Orleans spirit?
So I think right off the bat, when, you know, we were kind of figuring out how to pivot into an online world when everything was shut down, when this is such a tangible experience here, we were raffling off some knives to support community, New Orleans community fridges, food banks around town, things like that, in efforts to be able to, you know, give back in that respect. And it's, in another respect, it's as, sometimes as simple as supporting your friends who are having these pop-ups, who are just doing it to get by because that's their only income. It's the same thing with supporting a lot of these musicians virtually and, you know, the tip jars and things like that. So while, you know, the trend has been, we've seen a lot more people cooking at home because, you know, maybe they, you know, wanted to work on that skill set, and maybe they just never had the time, or maybe they're teaching their kids now how to cook, which I think is a skill set. It's a life skill set. So, you know, we've noticed these trends of, you know, folks paying more attention to what they're cooking at home and the tools they're using. And I feel like everyone's trying to make their homes a little bit more comfortable these days, because, you know, there's not much else to do, and we're kind of locked in it. But, you know, you saw a lot of people making bread, and you saw a lot of people making pasta. These things are really therapeutic. And I think that's, you know, we sort of made sure that we focused on making certain things like that available. Maybe it's a great baking book with, you know, the proofing basket, and, you know, kind of creating these little sets for people to be able to use at home during that time, you know, when they have this time to cook and they have this time. You know, we really got into more cookbooks because we realized that was a time, you know, for people to get into something more than what they were used to cooking. You know, I feel like we all kind of get into a rut at home sometimes of, like, kind of cooking some of the same stuff over and over. And I think this kind of gave people an opportunity to really sort of broaden that horizon and get into things maybe they wouldn't have normally gotten into cooking. So I feel like we've kind of been helping navigate people to certain you know, genres of cooking, certain countries, certain things like that. And then making sure they have the right tools for that at home. And it's bringing people joy. You really see, and I think that's something I didn't really anticipate, was like the joy that some of these tools bring people while they're cooking at home. It kind of makes you forget for a second that all this is like happening in the world. And I think that, you know, something as simple as that is really powerful in a way. And then, you know, making sure like, you know, there's that side of the coin, but the other side of the coin is like, you want to support your friends' restaurants who are doing to go, and you want to support your friends' pop-ups who are trying to get by. So like, there's a level of, you know, you want to cook at home now because you're there, but you also want to, you know, support your buddies, because the food scene here is so prolific and so important to us that if, you know, that goes, like Nina said earlier, you know, if that goes with the music, you know, what do we have here? It's just so part of our core. So I just feel, you know, I think overall folks are trying to comfort themselves at home. And I think a lot of that is found through food, and it's found through the tools they're using. And I think it's pretty impactful. And, you know, I think that we have focused wholeheartedly on making sure like we're available, you know, for consultations and things like that. If, you know, people have, you know, questions about what tool to use for this or which knife to use for this. And you can tell people getting into it a whole lot more than I felt most had ever had, you know. And we're not just a shop for chefs, you know, home cooks are such an important part of our community and of our business. And I think like, for some reason, it's just been, you find these weird silver linings in throughout all of this. And I think that us being available to sort of impart, you know, a different cookbook on somebody or the right tool is like something that seemingly is very small, but very impactful, I think, in the end.
Chef, one of the special parts of this book is we got to make a t-shirt with you.
Yes.
We partnered with our friends, Everybody World, and it was designed and creative directed by our friends, Terrence Teh and Naomi Abel, that just made this really beautiful shirt that was inspired by your childhood luncheons. It's actually, Naomi was inspired by your menu and drew, essentially drew what you used to eat as in your childhood. You talk about in the book, about how lunchtime was key in your family, that it was very, you could, other things were maybe negotiable, but lunch was always, you know, you had to be there. And you talk about how your mom loved music and would play music along the same time. So, and Ben, of course, you come from a very, very musical family. And I believe I see in both of you second generation music lovers, both inspired deeply by your parents. So I'd be curious if you could both touch on briefly, what was on your parents' playlist growing up? What are the sounds that if you were to hear it, would immediately make you think of your parents? And Shep, we'll start with you, and then we'll go to Ben, because I feel like Ben, you might need a little bit more time to get this answer. No pressure.
So my mom, she's a romantic. So listening to ABBA, she loved Julio Iglesias, and she'd always sing his songs in Spanish and, you know, dance around the house. She loved Diana Ross. So my mom has a beautiful voice, and just her, just being around the kitchen or being at the house. And we always had that music on, especially on the Sunday, because Sunday was considered like the day of rest. So it was a big family day where we'd be cooking and eating, but it was always definitely music surrounded. So that is, if I listen to any Diana Ross or ABBA song or Julio Iglesias, my mom comes to mind.
Oh, wow. Well, I grew up at Preservation Hall. It was pretty much our living room. So we didn't have access to popular music. Everything we heard was New Orleans music. I didn't hear popular music until I was kind of older, until I was maybe 8 or 9 years old. We had a radio, and we could hear some of the local pop stations. but I'm always reminded of, I mean, there's a certain New Orleans sound, like timbre in the music, that when I hear that timbre, it's resembles a human voice. It's some people, you know, they call it brassy, or when a musician creates certain inflections on the instrument. That's something that always reminds me of my parents, particularly my father, who would, you know, take me with him on his brass band performances. So I always associated music with these, like, New Orleans music with these big emotional moments in my life. I didn't know pop music. I didn't know Bruce Spring. I didn't know, man, we didn't know who Bruce Springsteen was. I mean, they didn't play his music down here. It was hard to hear anything else, but like what was going on down in New Orleans, like the Neville Brothers, the Meters, Alan Toussaint, Irma Thomas, Lee Dorsey. You kind of had to, yeah, that was what we were just listening to, kind of what everything they play on WWOZ today. You know, that was like what was popular down here. You know, that was our top 40 music. Yep.
By the way, speaking of New Orleans sound, I know Darren's up next, but I just got turned on to 79ers Gang. And
yeah,
I was playing it for my wife in the car, and within 30 seconds, she's like, is this band from New Orleans? Like, there's just this sound. It's like when Beyonce did Homecoming, it's like, there's just only one place where that sound right. comes from. Anyway, I digress. Darren.
Yes.
So we have a question from some of the people watching right now. And if you have more questions, please email us at events@fadin.com. You know, during these days with the quarantine and things like that, people are looking for music and food inspiration. So what have you been listening to, and what have you been eating during quarantine? And Jackie, we'll start with you.
I have been listening to a lot of Meters. The Meters brings me a kind of joy that I can't describe. Just getting into, you know, more Meter. I that was one of my biggest influences growing up. I used to go to jazz fests, you know, at a very early age with my dad every year. And, you know, that kind of music was introduced to me earlier. Actually getting more into New Orleans, old Alan Toussaint, a lot of Dr. John, just a huge fan of that. Actually a lot of Radiohead. I'm a big Radiohead fan. I feel like it's got the right mood and tone for, you know, sort of what's going on right now. Some Mazzy Star. I've been kind of really build on a record collection throughout all this, because I feel like music is absolute therapy right now. I talk about it all the time with like family members. And I think putting an investment into a little bit of the vinyl collection right now is what's getting a lot of people through, you know, or just music in general, and building on that. Because music is therapy, just like food is therapy. I've been eating a lot more plant-based food just because I want to keep my immunity up. I think that's just something I've focused on a lot more than I've ever have. Cooking at home a lot more, obviously. Eating out a lot less. So just trying to focus on, you know, a lot of green, especially heading into the fall, a lot of greens, a lot of gumbo. I've been cooking a lot of gumbo. My freezer is full of gumbo in various forms. Okra gumbo, a dark roux seafood gumbo, a chicken and sausage, everything you can imagine. I think these processes are very comforting. The process of making gumbo to me feels different right now than it ever has, in a way. It gives me like this therapy, just like when I've got my record playing on in the background. So yeah, I think the cooking at home with that background and that, you know, whatever you're into musically right now, is definitely like one of those therapeutic things you can do for yourself.
Ben, what are you cooking? What are you listening to?
Oh, wow. So I cook sort of what I think are like are things that'll be tasty for my band, like I was saying. And but also on the you know, like the healthier side. So I try to I love to eat. So let's see, what did we have today? We did like chicken thighs, seasoned chicken thighs. I cook with cast iron and some beans. I threw like a handful of mushrooms in there. Light seasoning, try to use, you know, just olive oil and like coconut oil. No, and just, you know, not a lot of meat, not a lot of fatty meats. But that's, I've seen like how a heavy meal can put a band to sleep really quick. And I've been at sessions before where that's happened. So I've learned not to do like real heavy cooking for them, you know, to get the best out of them. I mean, music, gosh, you know, I'll tell you, it's the internet's been it's such an amazing tool to discover new music, even new old music. And I haven't done it recently because I've been working on some original work, but I can easily get into like a rabbit hole. You know, I can just type in a city in West Africa. You know, I could just type in like Kinshasa and just go, you know, and 3 days later, you know, come up for air. But yeah, that's where I go. It's not, I'm not always like just need to hear what I know, but I'm always trying to like find the source of things and just find this like connective vibration through music where it's all connected. Yeah, I listen to quite a bit of vinyl because I have my parents' collection. So I listen to a lot of that. I have my own vinyl collection. And then the other half of the time we're playing our own music. So that's, I find a lot of inspiration in that as well. But I find a lot of inspiration and purpose in life by playing music and feeding, being able to cook for others. That's a, feels like a purpose, you know.
Chef?
Yeah.
Well, I've been on my days off, we've been either grilling a lot or we just got a little pizza oven. So we're having pizza night, and it's just fun. You know, I'm teaching my husband how to actually make pasta and become a grill master now. So we're just doing simple things like, you know, grilled pompano and just some grilled vegetables, like really light, simple. And I kind of go through phases where I want to eat, you know, healthy plant-based things. And then there's some days where I'm like, listen, this is a global pandemic. I'm going to treat myself today. So I can like go through some back and forth where it's like, I have a good week where I'm eating really healthy. And there's some weeks like, I'm like, no, this is, I can't deprive myself of some goodness. So I think that is a thing that I want to tell people is that, you know, if you need the comfort, get it. Take it, because, you know, it is a very hard time for everybody right now. And if you can find that little glimmer of hope through music and food, you know, my husband and I, we just put, you know, just that very chill music when we're grilling in the garden, and we put on things like Blood Orange or Santigold. It's just kind of like this very chill vibe in the garden. And that's what I kind of want to have when I'm at home with a glass of wine, just escaping everything that's going on, not looking at the news, but just really focusing on simple things, you know, like making a really good pizza and eating it, you know, like in 30 seconds. That's what I'm really enjoying now.
Mm. Jackie, I want to say that Radiohead also got me through the pandemic. YouTube served me up all of their like live footage, and I just kept going. So I would watch songs that were performed 20 years ago and then watch them perform in 2020 and see how specifically Tom's voice changed from early days. I would just like, I would time travel with Radiohead, and on my worst days in the pandemic, it really got me through of just like, all right, I want to see like the 1998 version of Talk to the Host, and now I want to see the 2018 version of it, and I just went back and forth. And Ben,
it's such an arc. I completely agree, and I couldn't describe that better than you just did. It's so true. You're deep diving old stuff to see how that has changed, and that, I don't know, that music is so impactful, and it's gotten me like from start to finish through. What's your favorite album?
It's not albums, it's songs. I'm okay. Like, the way that I listen to music is in songs. And speaking of that, Ben, if you ever pick up your, or when you pick up your Instagram show again, and it's just cuts from the Jaffe Parent collection, I will be there, well, along with everyone. If you're just playing your parents, Jaffe Parent's vinyl has its own radio show written all over it.
Oh, yeah.
I like so that.
I think there's something there, like just knowing it's from their collection. There's such like a rich history to that. And also having that creative constraint that it's only pulled from there, what they bought. I would definitely listen to that.
I'm up for the challenge doing it. I like the idea.
Yeah. So we have one more question for you, but I'm going to allow everyone to tag out and then we're going to end. Darren's going to take us out, but thank you to everyone who tuned in. Thank you to Faden so much for helping us get this book out. Thank you to everyone that showed up on this tour. It's been amazing. Thank you to all our participants. Thank you to everyone who bought a book tonight. Proceeds from sales go to Son of a Saint and the Preservation Hall Fund, two incredible charities picked by our musical and chef guest. We'd love for everyone within their last question to kind of say where people can find them, Instagram, website, wherever, but Darren's going to tag us out. And I just want to say thank you to my partner, Darren, and to Kong, who's not on here. Thank you for helping write a beautiful book, and to all the chefs who participated. It is truly beyond our wildest dreams. And a big thank you to Omnivore, who made these words come to visual life. Thank you. It's been great. So Darren, why don't you take us out with your last question?
So thank you to you and to Kong and
Snacky Tunes for everything. Chef, for the book, for the podcast, for the t-shirts, everything.
Yes, thank you everyone, and Kong and Greg and Faden and everyone who's watching. You know, we finished this book in March. We didn't know that this would be capturing a time capsule of independent restaurants and this vibe of just what it meant to go out and to be out and listen to music and find a great meal and music in any city in the world. And while we are probably entering another really dark phase, there is some light at the end of the tunnel. And so with your last statement and saying where people can follow you and then learn more about what you're up to and things like that, I'd love for you to say the really looking forward to when this is all done and when we're out of our houses and the pandemic is wrapped and everyone's safe and we have a vaccine. What are you looking forward to? Chef, we'll start with you. Oh, I think you're on mute.
What I'm looking forward to is finally going home to see my family in St. Lucia and just hanging with my mom and listening to some music and just looking at, you know, the beautiful Caribbean island. That's what I'm really looking forward to. So I'm counting down the hours and the minutes and the seconds that I can finally do that. But in the meantime, you can find me at one of my two restaurants, By What American Bistro and Compella Pen, or Instagram, it's just Nina Compton. So thank you for having me, and I hope to see you soon. Be safe, everybody.
Jackie?
I think I'm most looking forward to hopping on a plane anywhere in the world. Travel is so important to myself and Brant. And I think that's one of the things we've been mourning the most. So travel anywhere, especially Japan. You know, we have such a love affair with Japan through the shop and the families that make our knives. You know, that's one of the biggest things for us is the next trip to Japan. But also just a show at Tipitina's, you know, something as simple as that. I, you know, live music is just such, it's a void for us all right now. So live music and travel for me. But with that being said, you can find us at cotillianola.com. We're on Instagram. It's at cotillianola, C-O-U-T-E-L-I-E-R, Nola. We have a location in New Orleans and Nashville. Pending no major shutdown, we are open in a little limited capacity, but feel free to reach out to us if you got any questions or recommendations you need for any type of tool for cooking heading into the holidays. We want you all to be safe, be healthy, be happy. There is light on the other side of this, guys. We love you.
Ben, take us home.
Oh, wow. Oh, and you know, I'm looking forward to being back in Preservation Hall and being back with my friends, and that's being back in that space again. You know, that's been the hardest piece of all of this is these sacred spaces that are so important to all of us, where many of us haven't been able to go or breathe life into, and being able to breathe life back into those places and to commune again physically. Oh yeah. That's going to be special when that happens. I mean, until then it's getting ready, because I do feel the floodgates about to open, you know, and I feel something in energy like pushing through that is, you know, it's bursting. It's just bursting. And I'm really excited about something that I can't even really imagine. I just feel it happening. And I do feel something like this surge at this moment. And yeah, I can't wait for that moment. But Ben, until then, getting prepared for it.
Ben, I have to ask, I know that we are almost out of time, and you can find everything Preservation Hall, just Google it. When you are back in the hall, the pandemic is over, it is the first crowd, there is just a vibe and energy. What is the first song the band is playing?
Ooh. Oh man. Oh Lord.
By the way, your answer, this is permanent. It's on the record, so no pressure.
Yeah. My gosh, all eyes on me. Oh my gosh. Oh.
That's a hard question.
Man. You know what? That's I always say this, you know, it's about the people for me, and that's what's most important. Why? What do you want to hear us play?
No. You are the patron son of New Orleans, at the heart of the place that has preserved the heritage music and roots music. You are setting a new era where we get to come back and play this. What is the song?
Do you know the song that Charlie Gabriel always sings? He sang it to his wife. It was a conversation that he had with her on the telephone. And as soon as they got off the phone, he went and wrote the words down. And then he called me up and he said, listen to this conversation. It sounds like a song. And we turned it into a song, and it's called Come With Me to New Orleans. Mm. And is a love song to this city. And that would be the song that I would want to play first, is this love poem to New Orleans. Because the words from that song are what convinced his wife, his current wife, to move from Detroit and put down new roots in New Orleans.
There you go.
Yes.
Thank you all for joining us tonight. Thank you once again to Faden, our true partners in this whole project. Thank you all for joining us on tour. Thank you to our guests. We'll see you around. Have a good evening.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes.
Snacky Tunes.
This program is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.